Welcome to Football Never Sleeps. I'm Eric Hansen. The guy in the other box is Tyler James, and we're here to talk Notre Dame football with you for the next hour and a few minutes. We may even talk a little bit of Notre Dame's women's basketball, and we are not talking about my purple shirt. I think I picked it out by myself and got a tie to match, and that's non-negotiable. But we will be taking your questions, working them into our conversations about Notre Dame football. The Irish will be going into practice number 6 on Wednesday, and it's their last practice before Easter break. And then when they come back from that, then it's going to be kind of a hightailing it the rest of the way to the April 20th Blue Gold game at Notre Dame Stadium at 1 o'clock that day. There's some bells and whistles that you have to pay attention to, and free trials and things like that. Tyler's a lot better at that than I am, so I'm handing off to Tyler.
Yeah, first, make sure you are subscribed to us here on the YouTube channel. We appreciate everyone tuning in to us an hour later so Eric can get all of his women's basketball duties done. But if you hit the bell for reminders, you will know anytime we have sort of schedule changes, and also be reminded when we have content that isn't our live content that's coming out, whether it's highlights from practice or interviews and those kinds of things. Last week, we had an interview with Deuce Knight upon his arrival to Notre Dame. Also, make sure you hit the like button on this video. Chime in with comments and questions. If you want to ask questions during the show, make sure you've clicked through to YouTube, whether that's the app or the website. If you're trying to talk to us while you are watching us embedded somewhere, whether that's on social media or on inside90sports.com, you won't be able to get through for a comment. So make sure you click through to YouTube, and then you should be able to find the chat box. It'll be on the right-hand side if you're on a desktop version, and it should be below our talking heads if you're on a mobile device of some kind. Lastly, if you're not a subscriber to us over on our website, inside90sports.com, we hope you consider taking advantage of our 30-day free trial for our YouTube audience. Use promo code NDYT when you sign up to get free access to our premium analysis and recruiting coverage, special access to us over on the Insider Lounge, where we spend a lot of our time and share the information that you want to know there first before we talk about it or write about it elsewhere. There is a link to sign up for that deal in the video description below, so check that out. You can also, just anytime you go to sign up, make sure you use that code NDYT. If you use the link itself, it should put that code in there for you, but make sure it's in there to make sure you take advantage of the deal.
You see why I have him do it? Because I would have fallen asleep while I was doing that. Anyways, great stuff, Tyler. And now we'll get right into our Notre Dame football talk. So on Friday, Duke transfer quarterback, Notre Dame senior, Riley Leonard, had his second surgery of the year on his injured right ankle. He had a telescope surgery in January, procedure in January, shortly after he arrived at Notre Dame. And this was the ankle that he hurt against Notre Dame way back in September of 2023. Head coach Marcus Freeman said a stress fracture was beginning to develop, so doctors exchanged the old plate in the ankle for a new plate, and Freeman didn't totally rule him out for spring, but he's expected to be out for quote unquote a few weeks. I don't expect him back before the end of the spring, and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express. So Tyler, what is the short-term impact of the injury for Notre Dame as you see it?
Yeah, it would be surprised if he comes back. I don't know what the purpose would be. Maybe if he wants to run around a little bit with some shorts on, but I don't think you put him in pads before the end of spring. I think first the short-term impact for as it relates to Riley is just less opportunities for him to get the offense down in the spring, develop chemistry with Notre Dame's wide receivers. That has to be disappointing because that's the whole reason you make the transfer in January, to take advantage of that opportunity that Notre Dame has. And while he did get to do some of that for the first third of spring, I think the more important stuff is the stuff that was coming in the latter two thirds of spring. So he's going to miss some important stuff here for spring practice. So it'll be up to him and the coaching staff to make sure that he still has his head and everything. Isn't frustrated with this. I imagine it's got to be incredibly frustrating to go through this. Like you already had the surgery right before spring practice started, or in January, late January. in order to be ready for spring practice. And then you have this setback. So I think you got to make sure you stay positive and keep your head in the playbook and sort of, I guess, make an extra effort to make sure that you aren't missing a beat and do whatever you can to make up for the fact that you're not out there in the practice field. The good news, I think, at least if you're a backup quarterback in Notre Dame, there's more opportunities for you. You're Steve Angeli, you're Kenny Minchie, you're CJ Carr, you're going to get more reps. I think you could debate who it benefits the most. I think potentially Minchie and Carr benefit the most because they're no longer sort of splitting third team reps. There will be a second team reps and third team, and they'll probably split those between them. Certainly Steve Angeli will get an even better opportunity to state his case and that he's not necessarily sharing number one reps with anyone. I just don't know that that's necessarily going to matter in the long run, but we'll see how everything plays out with Riley Leonard, because certainly with the way things are going, nothing is – you can't really take anything for granted with Riley Leonard's health. So I think that's the short-term impact of things, and it'll be interesting to get to see more of those quarterbacks. I think that's the plus side from my perspective as someone who gets to observe what they're doing. What do you think? Is there anything I left out there, Eric?
Well, I think Howard Cross still owes him a dinner for injuring the ankle. And the guy that did the telescope, or woman that did the telescope surgery, the first one, also owes him a dinner. but I think, you know, it definitely changes the timetable, the earliest possible timetable for naming a starter. There's no way you can name a starter at the end of spring.
Right.
And I know Marcus said he wasn't in our hurry for that, but I'm sure they would have liked to have some idea, somebody with an inside track.
Yeah.
And really, if you haven't had a competition, you can't show the team who the number one quarterback is, even though you think you know who it is. You know, and I think some people brought this up on the message board. I'm not as concerned about this as they are, that they feel like, well, now Steve Angeli and the other quarterbacks don't have the information they need to decide whether they need to go into the spring version of the transfer portal. I really, unless Steve Angeli felt like he wasn't getting a great shot and he really had an indication from someone else he could be their starter without having been their spring, it seemed to make sense to me for him to stay at Notre Dame in 2024. And then kind of see what things look like going into 2025. And if he wanted to jump in the portal in December, that would be the time. Kenny Minchie, again, I hate to, you know, throw water on anybody speculating transfers because bizarre ones happen now. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that he has any motivation to transfer in the spring portal unless, I guess, if CJ Carr jumped him decisively and he was now at the bottom of the depth chart. But I don't think Notre Dame will make that clarity by the end of spring, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – like, was there going to be a scenario where that Steve Angeli was – or any of those guys was going to get that clarity? Like, I don't know. I don't think they were going to name a starter before that portal window closed, you know? Like, to what advantage – I mean
– Although last year that was kind of the same thing. And Tyler Buchner certainly could tell who the number one quarterback was,
right,
in the spring.
Yeah, you don't need there to be an official press release about who the starting quarterback is to have a sense of who the starting quarterback is going to be. So I don't think – I mean, if you leave spring and Steve Angeli isn't named the starter, he's like, well, what else do I got to do, right? Like, I mean, you sort of flip it the other way. It's like, well, if you're not the starting quarterback now, then what's going to change? So, I don't know that it would – give him less information necessarily. I think it's more information that he knows that Riley Leonard continues to get hurt, whether it's his fault or not. But I think there's a chance that it does change. If we look at the long-term aspect of it, if it does change Steve Angeli's mind to stay, like why not stick around if you're talking about the starter that is having these injury issues? And the other guys are going to get plenty of practice reps too. So I think that in terms of the long-term effects of it and those reps those guys are going to have, I think it's probably more good news than bad news for anyone not named Riley Leonard, right?
I would agree. So what's the long-term impact of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think potentially it helps convince Steve Angeli to stay. Now, I don't know that, or even Kenny Minchie. Like, I think any of those guys, I think that's the long-term impact. Those guys will have more and more reps. I think Steve Angeli gets more and more opportunities to take on the responsibilities of a number one quarterback, even if he doesn't enter the season that way. So I think those are all things that can help that quarterback room and give those guys just as much rope and as much reps and as much film to sort of break down of themselves that they can get. So I think, to me, that's the biggest long-term impact. What do you think, Eric?
I think that, and one that I didn't think of until I started hearing you talk and my mind drifted to this, was it keeps Riley Leonard from transferring again. You know, if he was falling behind Steve Angeli or whatever, he could have jumped back in the portal the way they have things set up now and gone somewhere else.
I think
for everybody but Riley Leonard, there's positives here. It gets them all more ready for 2025. It helps them learn the offense. There's a lot of positives. I don't think it's necessarily a great thing for Notre Dame if Leonard is going to be the quarterback, which I still think he's going to be if he's healthy, because you would love him to be able to run Mike Denbrock's offense that much longer. But I think in terms of the other guys individually, and I think if Riley Leonard can just at least throw with those guys and develop some chemistry, not necessarily do running around, I think that will be a big plus, because there's a lot of receivers that are in the mix. And then he's got two more to learn when they join in June in Bo Collins and Logan Saldate.
Yeah. And if it is truly a few weeks, and maybe he's not out there for the end of spring practice, like doing anything real, but yeah, maybe that's an opportunity for him to still get some throws in and develop chemistry with guys. I know it's not the same as those live reps, but I think there could be some value to that. I think that one of the other negatives would be for Mike Denbrock and Gino Gadulli just to have more time with Riley Leonard and get to know the ins and outs of his game better, because he is new to them, right? He's not, it's not only Riley Leonard learning what they do, they're learning about Riley Leonard too. So I think that is something that probably won't help Notre Dame in the long run, but there's ways to make up for getting to know and stressing the reads and the different things that go into the film study that you could do. And Riley Leonard should be right there watching everything that these guys are doing. So he should be learning the same lessons if he's not being able to sort of implement and show that he's learning that those lessons are sort of sticking in his head. But I think that's something that Notre Dame's going to have to figure out. I mean, I guess there is a world, which I don't think it's the one we're living in, that Notre Dame goes through spring and is like, you know what? Let's ride with Steve Angeli, CJ Riley, thanks for coming, but we're going to make you the backup. I don't think that's a world that we're living in, but in theory, this could be a window for Steve Angeli to do that. And Notre Dame say, you know what? Is it really worth us trying to figure this out through his injury situation when we have someone that we have confidence in? I don't think that's the case, because I don't think they would have went out and got him in the first place if they believed that was the case.
I think if he fully recovers from this in a reasonable amount of time, and I think a reasonable amount of time would be, let's say, the end of April, even after spring football ended, but that he's going into the summer with a full head of steam where he can do everything from a running and jumping and cutting standpoint, I still think Riley Leonard ends up being the quarterback. I think he's more what Mike Denbrock wants in a quarterback in his offense. He talked about, when we had our little window of opportunity with him, about how important he feels like a running quarterback, an adequately running quarterback, makes your offense so much more dynamic in college football, and it's a necessity. Mm-hmm. So, and Angeli isn't a statue. by any means. But I think in terms of skill set, that's the desired skill set is Riley Leonard, as long as he can improve his passing. And again, you're just a few weeks further behind. But we've seen people in, you know, we've seen quarterbacks in a shorter time get ready for a season. For example, DeShone Kizer was a disaster in the spring of 2015 to the point that he thought, gee, am I even playing the right sport? Maybe baseball is what I should be doing. And then had a really good August camp. And then Malik Zaire gets hurt in game two of that season. And DeShone Kizer just went up. So I think there's enough time, but this can't be something that becomes intermittent. Oh, well, another Riley Leonard injury. So,
right.
Do we want to take questions before we kind of move on here?
Yeah, we can do that. We got a few quarterback questions, so let's prioritize those first and then get to some of the others. First is from Brian Habermel. You guys have gotten to see Kenny Minchie live. I've only seen his highlights. Kenny reminds me of a bit of Everett Golson. I always like Golson. Is that comparison anywhere close?
I would say that would not be the first person I thought of. And this is why, you know, Everett to me was a guy that was a reluctant runner and used his feet, especially in high school. He had to learn how to run option and learn how to be a running quarterback in college. He was incredible at extending plays in high school. The way he would run around and buy himself time and just extend the plays. Kenny, I think, is a more willing runner. He's a bigger physical kind of runner. And what was interesting to me about Kenny was when Notre Dame was getting ready to play USC last October, Kenny Minchie was Caleb Williams in practice. And Al Golden was so impressed with Kenny Minchie that he actually singled him out in interviews and went and thanked him for being such a good scout team quarterback and giving them such an accurate look. And he said, look, this guy not only can run around, he's got arm talent. And so there's something really to like about Kenny Minchie, except for the fact I don't know whether opportunity is going to present itself for him in the next year or so. We'll see with injuries and so forth, because Steve Angeli has more experience. I think CJ Carr is kind of that guy that's, you know, what people are hoping turns into the best quarterback at Notre Dame since, you know, the Charlie Weiss era. And so does Kenny get squeezed in that, or does somehow he get an opportunity to show that? But I would say Everett Golson isn't my comparison for him, but I think that's a heck of a try.
Yeah, I've seen some. When I've watched his high school film, I compared him a little bit to DeShone Kizer. I think he's more similar to Kizer than Golson. He's not as tall as
Okay, Tyler is frozen up, so he's probably saying he's not as tall as DeShone Kizer. And so we'll go to the next question here, although he needs to bring them up. So I do really like what Kenny Minchie can do. And I do think that this spring practice now becomes really important for him as he positions himself for the 2025 season. So I'm going to text Tyler just to let him know that he's frozen in time here. And I appreciate you guys. Yep, there he goes. He knows. He will be back here shortly. I'm going to soft shoe this a little bit. For anybody that didn't see the Notre Dame women's basketball game, I covered that earlier today. They're into the Sweet 16 against Oregon State, who's the number 3 seed. Notre Dame is the number 2 seed. The best team in women's college basketball, number 1, is in that regional in Albany Easter weekend. Notre Dame will play Friday. We don't know what time yet. We'll probably know by the end of the games today what that is. And Tyler is back with us. And that's the end of my women's basketball report and my telepathic thoughts of what Tyler was saying about Kenny Minchie.
Yeah, I heard you chime in to say that you couldn't hear me, and then my screen went black, and then all of a sudden the whole thing shut down on me. So apologies, folks. The internet was not being kind to me. So what I was saying about Kenny Minchie, I don't know everything that Eric said.
You said he kind of compared to Deshaun Kizer. You did get that in, and then you were like,
Yeah. So he's smaller than Deshaun Kizer. I think he throws on the run a little bit similarly. I think they have they had a similar anticipation on their throws. I think Kenny Minchie was probably a little bit more polished as a high school passer. And didn't rely on his legs in the same way that Deshaun Kizer did at times. So that would be the comparison for me. I see Brian also chimed in that he was watching some other YouTube live shows, and Malik Zaire spoke about Riley Leonard being a package guy like Buckner was for Jack Cohn. I don't see it. I don't see that either, Brian. I think Notre Dame wants to have better quarterback play than the Jack Cohn, Tyler Buckner combination. So I don't know that would make a lot of sense for Notre Dame trying to replicate that.
We do love Malik Zaire, but no, but I don't agree with that.
Eric probably should have seen this while I was gone, but a compliment from Chris W. Good job with the presser, Chris says. So make sure we get that in there. Redimax, which makes me hungry, is asked, how does this injury reallocate blue and gold game snaps? Does Angeli get 3 or 4 quarters, or will the second half go to a walk-on, assuming Minchie and Carr split reps for the other team?
I don't think we've gotten to that point where they're thinking about that yet. I think they'd like to see Notre Dame run as much of those three as they can, and with Notre Dame's personnel. I don't know that they're going to go to a walk-on in the
For the record, in practices that we've been at, they don't even have another quarterback throwing passes. Obviously Dylan DeVezin is still on the roster, but he's been working at, I think, wide receiver or running back. He's moved positions, so they could bring him back if they want to, but I don't know.
And Anthony Rizak's not here, right?
Correct. Yeah, he doesn't come till the summer,
and he is the walk-on quarterback that probably will get some work in the fall. So
I would imagine it'd probably be like Angeli's on one team, and then maybe Carr's on the other, or Minchie's on the other, and then Carr like subs in for those two or whatever, and then Minchie and Carr sort of run the rest of the way through. Maybe at some point, like, Angeli's team becomes Minchie's team, or however they want to do that. I think Minchie and Carr will get most of the reps. I can't imagine there would be someone else that it would be worth giving reps to in the spring game. All right, a couple questions from Jeffrey Stevens. What is up with Eli Raridan? Is he okay, and why isn't he practicing?
He is practicing. They are not giving him the full breadth of all the drills and so forth. Tyler, we didn't get a chance Saturday to follow up on him. That was on my list of things to talk about, but as soon as the Riley Leonard thing came out, it shifted what I was going to ask. So do we know what's going on with Eli?
They haven't been specific in terms of what it is. I would imagine. I mean, it seems like they're just being preventative with his knee, but I don't know if there's something else or a red flag that came up that sort of triggered that. But I think it's mostly out of precaution is what it sounds like, but I guess I don't know for certain if it's something else. Like, I guess it could be something else that's bothering him that we're not aware of, but I don't know what that would or could be. The other question from Jeffrey Stevens is, have they hired a GA to work with Mickens and the safeties? Is this still the plan?
Tyler, do you know? It looked like there was somebody out there.
There is someone, and unfamiliar.
Besides Marty Biagi.
Yeah, the last time I tried to get an answer, they were like, well, they're still not officially hired yet, so we can't tell you. And then they're still not listed in the directory, so I haven't spent a lot of time trying to figure out the mystery of who the safeties GA is. It hasn't been on the top of my list, but there is someone else there helping out with the defensive backs alongside Mike Mickens. And then, I mean, the practice that we were at, Al Golden, Marty Biagi, and Mike Mickens were all working with the defensive backs. So there's being plenty of...
Occasionally Marcus.
There's being plenty of attention given to the safeties this spring, even though Mike Mickens is taking on a bigger role. All right, I think that's all the questions we got for now.
Okay. So we had a chance to talk to the offensive and defensive linemen last week, some of them, as well as the offensive and defensive line coaches, Joe Rudolph and Al Washington of the defensive line. So we're going to start with offensive line, which is probably, other than quarterback with the injuries, the most intriguing position group of the spring. So after hearing from Joe Rudolph, do we have any indication of how long these position battles will take place, Tyler?
It doesn't sound like they're in a rush. And the way that Joe Rudolph talked about Rocco Spindler probably being only like 90%, they're being careful with Rocco Spindler. So I don't think that they're going to want to rule out Rocco Spindler's possibility of being a starter when he's not totally healthy yet. I think Joe Rudolph likes the competition. And we saw last spring that plenty of things can change from the beginning of spring to the end of spring, and even from the end of spring to the beginning of fall camp. So I think that this is going to be an ongoing thing. I don't know that Notre Dame, I mean, we might be seeing a lot of the same alignments and guys lining up in with the same units this spring, but I don't get the sense that this is like, okay, this is going to be a done deal by the end of the blue-gold game. What about you?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about one starter and maybe two and maybe three, but it could change. I think what I read between the lines was that Joe Rudolph really likes Pat Coogan's consistency. And he feels like if he and his strength and power, and if he can better translate the strength and power to the actual field from the weight room, mm-hmm. he's a guy that could lock up a starting spot. Billy Shrouth seems well positioned because he was a guy that was killing it. And then the learning started to speed up and Billy wasn't as sure of himself and lost the job during fall camp. However, when Billy came in as a replacement late in the season, he was really good. And he has continued that arc into the spring. Ashton Craig, it doesn't seem like they're ready to challenge him with anybody at this point. They seem to be pretty happy with him. Charles Jagaza seems like he's going to be one of the two tackles. But again, I think Rocco has an opening to challenge, and I think the Emil Wagner Tosh Baker battle is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I think it seems to me like they have three players for two spots at both tackle and guard, and I could still see one of that not being set quite yet. Once we exit the spring, I think we'll probably have a good indication of how it's trending, but I wouldn't rule anything out. I think it probably seems clear based on the way we talked about it. Ashton Craig, from my perspective, seems like the most secure in his starting job right now. I think
Otting is the, you know, they haven't moved anybody from guard to try to challenge him.
Yeah.
I guess they could in the summer, but right. They seem happy with him.
Yeah. So, and the fact that they were willing to move on from Zeke Correll to sort of clear the way for Ashton Craig, it speaks to like how confident that Joe Rudolph and the coaching staff is in Ashton Craig taking over. So I think if you said what would be the biggest surprise from this offensive line group, it would probably be, in my opinion, that Ashton Craig wasn't the starting center. I think that seems like the most obvious thing to me that will be the case when the season starts.
Okay. So I did an interview with Charles Jagaza last week, and we ran the story. Say his name better than I did.
Jagaza.
Okay, I got to just say it like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Jagaza. Yeah. So I expressed my confidence that he'll win a tackle job, probably the left tackle. How about you?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I'm not sure that left tackle is Charles Jagaza's best position, but it seems like he's ND's best option at left tackle right now. So that's how I feel about it. I mean, I think I understand why there is such a bright future ahead for Charles. I don't know that it's quite there yet. He has plenty of learning to do, but just sort of his perspective and his attitude and the way he goes about it makes you understand why there's so much confidence in him. What else did you sort of take away when you spent time talking to Charles last week?
He's an impressive physical dude and an impressive mental dude. I mean, he is, I would not want to do a quiz bowl against him. And he's a film freak. He was actually kind of upset because the length of the interviews with a combined with an 11 o'clock class he had meant that he couldn't watch film of practice and critique himself afterwards. That's how crazy he is about looking at film. I also really like his approach, and you kind of reference this a little bit, in that he's not really worried about, okay, who's starting? Is somebody gaining on me? He's just, what do I got to get better at? And then if that makes him a starter, he's willing to do that. And if it doesn't, if somebody's better, then he'll cheer for them. The other thing that, from an injury standpoint of him coming back, we got a little bit more detail with him. He had a serious PCL injury, but he also had an ACL injury. It wasn't serious, but I mean, that's two ligaments in the same knee that were injured, and he thought it was a pulled hamstring. So he's got...
It's hard to say not serious and ACL in the same sentence.
Yeah, it is. But that was his description of it, and I wasn't going to argue with him. The interesting part about it was he was way ahead of schedule in his recovery. He said when he had the surgery last February that they thought about this February was when he was going to be back to 100%. And he was back to 100% before that. Now, he said there's certain things in his knee that will never be the same again, but he still can be really effective with that knee, and he's got all the confidence in it that it's not going to be a problem. The one other thing that was really interesting to me, and this kind of came up a little bit with Emil Wagner too, was how much he viewed there being an organizational shift in strength and conditioning. And he said there's way more emphasis on nutrition and some of those things. And I just thought that was interesting from a guy that was a freshman. Now, again, he didn't have Matt Bayless. Matt Bayless was his strength and conditioning coach for a month. And then it was Fred Hill that came in. Yeah, that came in and was the interim. But Fred pretty much kept things similar to what Matt Bayless had done, as far as we knew. But with Lauren Lando coming in, it has really been an organizational shift. So that was something else to me that was pretty interesting. So more questions or more linemen?
More linemen.
Okay. So you had a chance to talk to Tosh Baker, who is right now running with the ones at right tackle. So what were your takeaways from the Tosh Baker conversation?
Yeah, I mean, first, I mean, it's hard to ignore like his discussion about why he stayed at Notre Dame. I think that was really interesting and maybe something that you don't see as much across college football anymore. I mean, we're talking about a tackle who was stuck behind Joe Alt and Blake Fisher for the last 2 years, and he has stuck with Notre Dame. He was able to start the Sun Bowl, which was very important to him, get to sort of see where he's at. Figure out what he needs to improve on. Not that he wasn't getting that from practice, but it's different when you get out there in the game and get a better feel for where you're at and get a better sense for that. He said that two things specifically kept him at Notre Dame, and that was the guys in the offensive line room and being able to learn from Joe Alt and Blake Fisher. He understands that people in his situation might have left, but he loves being at Notre Dame. He loves his teammates, and he loves the coaching staff. I think it speaks to who he believes Joe Rudolph is. Because if this was a guy that he didn't have a lot of faith in, that would be another reason for him to get out of here. But He believes that Joe Rudolph can make him into a starter this year.
That's his third offensive line coach, too.
Right. So I think it was interesting. I still have my doubts on sort of the talent level of Tosh Baker, like how good he is. Can he be for Notre Dame? But I liked everything he said in terms of his mindset, his reasoning, and why he's in the position he's in. I think he understands that. He doesn't believe like this is like his job and it's over. Like he's got plenty of work to do. He's a big dude. Like you see him in person, it's like, man, if you can get everything figured out, this is a lot to work with here. And I think that's what Notre Dame's hoping it can do.
And then I had a chance to do a story on Emil Wagner, super interesting guy as well. And let's start with the weight part of it. Emil was listed at 281 when spring practice began. And he came in, he was 255 when I talked to him in May of 2022. So he was getting ready to win the shot put championship in Ohio. So he was a senior in high school. He was a June enrollee. He was 180 as a high school freshman. So he's come a long way. But he said he is up to 290, 290 plus now, which is a big difference from 281. So he said that figure is already outdated. And his goal is to be at 300. And he is not sweating this. He's had times where he's eaten as much as 8,000 calories in a day, which sounds like he was in the hot dog eating contest. And that's amazing. And he kind of went through what a typical breakfast is in an 8,000 calorie day. And I'm like, my goodness. And he's like, I'll make the sacrifice to eat. But the thing about it is he's not just putting on mass. He is dedicated to do this by putting on muscle. And that's maybe why it's a slower process. He just doesn't want to say, well, let's go to Taco Bell and order everything bad on the menu there. He wants to do this through muscle mass, keeping explosion, quickness. You know, he ran a 4.740 in high school. So he wants to be that kind of athlete as he grows into the position. And he's pretty confident he's going to get there. And he also feels like there's other things that he needs to do. He was in his head too much, he said last year, thinking too much of what the whole defense was doing instead of focusing on his job. He said, you know, his dad was a high school defensive coordinator. And he's like, well, what are the safeties doing? And, you know, he just needed to be focused on his own job. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also kind of interesting that Emil Wagner and Tosh Baker are housemates and they are pretty good friends. And he said one of the most helpful guys to him has been Tosh Baker. So even though they're competing with each other, they're helping each other. And I think that's pretty cool.
We got a question here from Chris W. What kind of conditioning and weight training do the quarterbacks do?
Tyler?
Well, I mean, I don't know their workouts necessarily, but I think they're certainly tailored to the abilities that those guys have, whether it's core strength, balance. Those are, and obviously keeping their arms strength and rested, I think, is all important. So I couldn't give you a, like, here's the things they do on a daily basis, but I know that it's something that they're very focused on and wanting to get Notre Dame or get those players trained. And it's not like the quarterbacks are doing the same thing as the offensive linemen. It's not like bench press is the most important workout for the quarterbacks. They're tailored to what those guys can do and what those guys need to do in order to be better versions of themselves.
The one quarterback that I had a chance to ask about that was CJ Carr. And I remember him being pretty impressed with Lauren Landau and the position specific things. I didn't drill down into the details at that point. He made references to them and it wasn't real super specific details, but he did say he was really impressed with how geared it was to the quarterback mindset and what the quarterback does on the field.
Yeah, Chris chimed in that you never see the quarterbacks bulk up at all. I would
Brady Quinn.
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree with that. You just don't see the freshmen, so you don't see them what they look like as much. It's not going to be as massive. Like, there's no, like, you don't need 30 more pounds as a quarterback usually. But there are ways that they bulk up, and maybe their weight composition is different, right? Like, maybe they weigh similar, but they've trimmed some fat and get some muscle. But yeah, it's not, gaining weight usually isn't the biggest area of focus for the quarterbacks, because that's not necessarily what will make them a better thrower of the football. The next one we have is a recruiting question, so let's hold that off till later when we get some recruiting talk in there.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay. So, we then talked to Al Washington, and we talked to some of the defensive linemen, and Al Washington spoke to reporters for the first time. He interviewed for the head coaching job at Boston College, and then a couple of the guys that Tyler talked to were Jason Anye and Josh Burnham. So how did Washington view the opportunity to interview at his alma mater, and it ended up going to Bill O'Brien?
Yeah, I think he had a pretty good outlook on it. I think he saw it as a no-lose situation. It wasn't like he's actively trying to leave Notre Dame, but this was an opportunity that was too good to not pursue. Being the head coach at his alma mater, he would have loved to have that job. Lost out to Bill O'Brien, someone who has head coaching experience. So that was going to be hard for Al Washington to overcome, I think. There was seemingly like a growing support within the former player group of Boston College players that were interested in Al Washington given the opportunity. But he's sort of taken it in stride. He it's not like it's taken a lot of his focus off of what Notre Dame's defensive linemen need to do. I think he is very happy with his job at Notre Dame. Like I said, you can't really blame a guy for at least looking into this possibility. Even if I think on paper, maybe someone would say, well, is he necessarily qualified to be the head coach? But to have that experience of going through the interview process and preparing, like, this would be my vision for a program. I think that's important for him. And I think sort of can speak to sort of the coaches that he's coached under. And he talked about how he's learned so much from Marcus Freeman and so many of the other coaches that he's had a chance to spend time with.
Yeah, I think had this not been Boston College, Al Washington's name doesn't come up, but it's his alma mater. I think his next step is a defensive coordinator job, and right, then to the head coaching ranks for him.
Yeah, I would agree.
And so he talked about a lot of the players. Now, in the last practice that we were in, Riley Leonard and Howard Cross had the day off. And so a lot of the guys that are kind of the up-and-coming interior defensive linemen got a lot more work. In just the conversation that you had or we had with Al Washington, Tyler, do you think the defensive line realistically could be three deep across the front from end to end?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much playing time all those guys will get, but it does seem like there's confidence in at least two deep at every position. And then there's guys that are emerging at each position, seemingly at the third level. I can run through the names. At Viper, you have Jordan Botello, Junior Tui Halamaka, and Boubacar Traore. I think there's a chance that Traore could even pass up Tui Halamaka there, but I think those are three Vipers that there's some confidence in. And obviously, if you needed to, I think Joshua Burnham could still play there. At nose tackle, you got Howard Cross the third, Gabriel Rubio when he returns, if he returns, as is expected. And
Donovan, he was watching practice the other day.
Yeah, and Donovan Hayashi's, yeah, he's back on campus. And I think he even – Jason Anye even mentioned that he was living with him. So Gabriel Rubio isn't going far away. At defensive tackle, you got Riley Mills, Jason Anye, and then pick your third stringer between Brennan Vernon and Tyson Ford. At defensive end, you have R.J. Oben, Joshua Burnham, and then Bryce Young, who's someone that even though Marcus Freeman didn't want to talk too much about the freshman, couldn't help but mention Bryce Young because of just how physically impressive he is.
And he couldn't resist that. That was my question. He needed to throw one name out there at least.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a very healthy group. I think in terms of the depth there, like, I don't know the – I think you could probably ask for more in terms of like proven edge rushers. Like that would be I think that's the question mark going into the season with the defensive line. But in terms of the number of guys they have and bodies that could play if needed, I think the D-line room's in a really good spot right now.
Yeah. And one guy that is kind of forgotten and may end up getting forgotten is Aiden Gobira, who I think is a really interesting prospect who has just missed a lot of time coming back from the ACL, and he is not in spring practice right now. So there are other people that are getting a jump on him, so it's going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned Tyson Ford, and I did ask about him, and kind of based on Al Washington's answer, what's your read on Tyson Ford? Is he becoming an afterthought? Is it just he's in the oven and he's not done yet? What's kind of your take on Tyson Ford, who's a junior now?
Based on the feedback and the way Al Washington was talking about him, he seems more like an afterthought than someone that's like on the verge of doing something big. When he was asked about like sort of who's next, he named a bunch of guys and Tyson Ford wasn't one of them. Although I think the through line with all those guys that are next at least played some meaningful reps last year. So maybe he's not willing to say that about Tyson Ford because they didn't use him. So I don't know, like he's someone I know that you and I were very excited about his potential. But the moving back between defensive end and defensive tackle, it just doesn't seem to be a clear path to playing time. And with Brendan Vernon moving over to challenge him at the defensive tackle spot where they're both competing now as former defensive ends, you wonder, like, I mean, maybe it's maybe he's like a Jason Anya where it takes a while and he finally makes an impact as a senior or late as a junior. But it's just where we stand right now, it seems like there's still a long way to go until he gets to crack the rotation.
He did have a green shirt underneath his jersey, which it seemed like some of the guys that had those were not participating in every single little thing in practice, but I wasn't watching him close enough since he has become an afterthought with me, although he's my favorite afterthought.
That's a t-shirt. That's to be a t-shirt. My favorite afterthought.
He's my favorite. It almost sounds like a country song, doesn't it?
There you go. My favorite afterthought.
I'm going to have to send that to Garth Brooks and have him write it up. Okay, so we were talking about who isn't taking a step forward. Who do you think will take a step forward on the defensive line this
spring? Yeah, I mean, I think Jason Ani will continue to improve. I think we were very big on him during the offseason and during fall camp with what we saw from him. That didn't necessarily translate a ton during the season. I think there was just such a big gap between the trust level between Riley Mills and Jason Anya that they didn't ask him to do a lot. But I do think that he is on the verge of having an even bigger role. I still think it's Riley Mills' job and he's going to be in there when it matters the most. But I think there's going to be a willingness to maybe play someone like Jason Anya more. Donovan Einisch, I think if you just like took the comments that Al Washington had about any player specifically, he sang his praises the most, it seemed like. Like, he was a big fan of Donovan Einisch and where he's going and what impact he can make, whether it's this season or beyond. Obviously, we're talking about a guy that's playing behind Howard Cross and could even be stuck behind Gabriel Rubio come this season. But I think there's a chance that he can play between both. Like, maybe what ends up happening is they're too deep at both those spots and Heinisch plays a little of both of those as like a third guy. Joshua Burnham, I'm very high on him. I think that he's going to handle that transition over to the strong side end spot. Well, he continues to add weight. I think he has some explosiveness that's very valuable. And then Boubacar Traore is just someone that, I don't know, since we saw him in the fall, it's just like, I can't wait to see more of him. And I think there's a willingness to, as long as he continues to develop and have the strength that he needs to. He has some unique quickness around the edge that I don't know that Notre Dame has a lot of that, especially with the length that he has in terms of his arms.
Yeah, I'm a big Josh Burnham fan. Bryce Young has gotten my attention. Brandon Vernon intrigues me, if for no other reason. I don't know where that's going yet, but I think he's on a track where he can slowly make an impact. But the Heinisches are just hilarious because whoever gives them the three stars should be spanked, because those guys never ever look like three stars once they get to college. I mean, yeah, both of them.
Don't give a Heinisch a three star if they're going to Notre Dame, and don't give a Hawaiian a three star if they're going to Notre Dame.
Exactly.
I think those are the lessons.
You know, and initially I was a big fan of Boubacar Traore just because I like to say Boubacar. but he really does jump out in a crowd because of that quickness. And when you hear the coaches talk about him now, I could see him forging his way into more playing time, because he has things that Junior Tuihalamaka doesn't have. Junior is incredibly smart, incredibly assignment correct. I still don't know that he's at his best position, but I don't know what that would be otherwise. I don't think he can go back to linebacker at this point, but I'm really curious to see what Boubacar does. And Jordan Botello has been one of the guys that I've really been intrigued with, just because he was so out of control and so destined to be a transfer portal guy, and he didn't end up doing that. He ended up staying. He ended up getting better. And I think this is a really interesting offseason for him, because he may prove a lot of people wrong this year. We'll see. And prove me right, which would be even better.
That's what matters most.
That's right. So more questions or keep moving?
I don't think we have any questions. Well, we have some recruiting questions. Oh, here's one from Joe Long. I missed this one. I forgot that I had started. Do you expect similar results from bringing in another one-and-done quarterback?
No, I think it's a completely different set of circumstances. I think the biggest problem for Sam Hartman was having an inexperienced offensive coordinator who couldn't play chess in the big games. And I think Sam Hartman would have had a better year had, let's say, Mike Denbrock been here last year. And we'll see. But no, I mean, then you could just say that about any program. And there are so many transfer portal quarterbacks who have done a very good job. I realize that people aren't used to this. They don't like this. And I'm not saying that you do, Joe, that you don't like it. But we get this on our message board a lot, that they'll never be able to recruit. Well, they're recruiting better than they ever have. Right. At quarterback. And so, but I think it's a fair question. And I think the answer is also fair, and that we need to be open-minded, because there's nothing similar to Riley Leonard and Sam Hartman other than their transfers. And they came from another ACC school.
Right.
But their skill set is very different.
Yeah. Yeah. And it felt like Sam Hartman was coming to Notre Dame to become like maybe a different version of himself. Whereas Riley Leonard, I think, is coming to Notre Dame to just sort of continue to be what he is and sort of elevate that to another level with a higher competition level, better teammates around him potentially, and maybe a better situation. And especially with the hiring of Mike Denbrock, you believe that that is something that can play out for him. So I think that I like that better. As long as the offensive line plays at a high level, like, I think I still have concerns about the offensive line. I do think the running backs and offensive line, or running backs and receivers, are talented. They have good talent at those spots that I think can help Riley Leonard, and I think the receivers will probably be better than the ones that Sam Hartman played with last year, even if some of them are just better versions of themselves from last year. But I, so I do think that's a better situation, although I you can't argue that the offensive line is a better situation because Joe Halt isn't on the offensive line. But I do think I like how, at least from my expectation, McDenbrock's probably going to tailor the offense around Riley Leonard, whereas it felt a little bit like Sam Hartman was being tailored into Notre Dame's offense, if that makes sense. And because Sam Hartman wanted that too, like he wanted to be more of a pro style guy than what he had been at Wake Forest. And so that was sort of what they were trying to do. And I don't know that it always succeeded in the way they wanted it to.
So Marcus Freeman's press conference on Saturday was a little bit shorter. He was anxious to get over to see the Notre Dame women's basketball team play, which was my assignment that day after the press conference and writing the Riley Leonard story. But there were some other news that came out of that. So Tyler, what were your big takeaways from beyond the Riley Leonard stuff and the things that we've already talked about?
Yeah. And I mentioned the freshman thing that it was just funny to me, especially when he got asked about very specifically about Kedron Young and Aeneas Williams and how they are handling pass blocking responsibilities. Is that because that's something that you have to sort of be able to do if you're going to get into the rotation as a freshman. And he like turned that, he started talking about it a little, then sort of turned it into a discussion about how he doesn't want guys to be comparing themselves to each other, or everyone has their own journey. He was sort of going back to this, what seems like this motto and talking
the point. The
bumpy road to good or great or whatever your goal is, I suppose. So he seems to be really stressing that. So I thought that was interesting. I think he's in a spot where he continued to do that because of Xavier Watts, right? Like Xavier Watts is the poster boy for someone who like didn't know what was going to happen, moved positions, and now stuck with it and became defensive player of the year. So I think they have that to sort of lean on, and there's still going to be opportunities for guys. They're not going to limit them because they're freshmen, but they're trying to sort of keep them in the right perspective and not allow the anticipation or expectations to get to them. The other thing, speaking of safeties, he spoke very highly about Adon Schuler and Luke Talich. He sounds very confident in their ability to help this season. I know me personally, I've been impressed with Schuler every time I've seen him this spring. He really looks the part. Luke Talich has always been physically impressive. So I think those are intriguing options that we don't necessarily think will be starters, because the way it's intended is that Rod Hard from Northwestern comes in the fall and we'll be able to take that spot. But I think they're going to have some options there to go deeper than just two safeties.
Yeah, the whole freshman thing, I see why he's intentional with it. And I was the first one that asked the freshman question. I said, who's impressed you? And the fact that he came up with Bryce Young, really hit me, because Kingston Viliamu-Asa was the guy he was really impressed with, and I think he still is. Mm-hmm. And that meant Bryce Young made a big jump. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. But you're in the transfer portal era, and guys that would have sucked it up and stayed and been patient,
right,
that's not the MO anymore. Mm. So you really do have to reinforce that message. I think that was very intentional. And I'd love to think that those kids are reading all our articles. I'm not sure that that's the case, but they do look at social media, so maybe they get a little bit of it.
It does start in the recruiting process too. I think Notre Dame's trying to find guys that it thinks will do that, because that's the blueprint that Marcus Freeman is sticking to. That's what they want to do. They want to build with recruiting classes and sort of fix holes with the transfer portal. Like they're not going to try to build a talented team out of the transfer portal. They want to build a talented team through recruiting. And that involves being able to find guys that they believe will stay at Notre Dame, because if you bring in a bunch of guys that leave, that doesn't do you much good. And especially with the way Notre Dame has some limitations on transfers compared to others, like that would be that if you lose a bunch of guys after their freshman year, that's hard to sort of compensate for. And I think you sort of would have to sort of over recruit in future recruiting classes to sort of make up the difference.
One other thing we should mention, Riley Leonard's wasn't the only injury. Deion Colsey has a hand/finger injury. Tyler, what can you tell us about his return?
Yeah, it was a dislocated finger that needed surgery. Marcus Freeman expected him to be able to be back doing some things this week, but probably not in a position to be catching passes, which obviously is a primary part of Deion Colsey's job. So an unfortunate setback there, but not something that should impact him long term.
An interesting little tidbit I thought that Marcus mentioned about the wide receivers. There are some guys that are versatile that can play a lot of different wide receiver positions or play more than one, and they can elevate their status because they're but that doesn't mean a guy that can only play one position isn't able to rise to the top of the depth chart either. But there are definitely distinct players, some that are really kind of locked into one position, some that he feels like can play more than one position. So it's going to be interesting to see how those battles play out. But Jordan Faison continues to be incredible at lacrosse.
And from everything we've seen, very inactive as it comes to football. Even when exactly. They have a game last weekend, he was not doing much when we were at practice on Wednesday. Now, maybe he picked it up later on in the week when we weren't at practice.
Right. Well, they didn't have a game this past Saturday. They are, I think, back to number one, I didn't look at the poll today, but I expected that they would rise to one since Army, who was the number one team, lost. And I think Syracuse is going to come in at three or four. So they've got a huge game this Saturday. So I do not expect him to show us much in practice on Wednesday.
Yeah, and Brian is on top of things. Thanks for mentioning that. Keetron Young was also dealing with a bit of a hamstring injury that had limited him in some of practices last week. So good job, Brian. Thanks for reminding us of that.
Okay, we're going to skip Pro Day unless you wanted to give a real quick.
No, just shout out to Thomas Harper. I thought he had a really good day, 42-inch vertical, 4.4840, someone that didn't get to combine invite but seemed to have made the most of his Pro Day. So big ups to Thomas Harper. It'll be interesting to see what he can do to land on a potential roster going into the NFL.
And in a very short period of time, your Pulitzer Prize version of the recruiting reset. What do we need to know about what's going on with recruiting right now?
Yeah, so they're bringing in visitors with the spring practices going on. Last week, Derek Meadows, and over the weekend, Derek Meadows, a wide receiver out of Bishop Gorman, who's basically Notre Dame's top receiving target remaining in the 2025 class. Mark Zachary, a highly coveted cornerback that Notre Dame is in good shape with, was back on campus. Can't forget Deuce Knight, Notre Dame's quarterback commit, was back on campus and helping recruit those guys.
Tyler was at the airport.
I was at the airport to get some comments from him as soon as he arrived. Chuck McDonald from Modern Day High School is a cornerback, Rivals 100 guy, very talented player. He was on campus, and it sounds like Notre Dame's going to be able to get him back on campus for an official visit. So that's a good development there. And then continuing yesterday and today with Brandon Finney, a receiver out of IMG Academy, Raiden Vines-Bright out of IMG Academy, Gavin Nix out of IMG Academy. A lot of IMG Academy guys have been coming through Notre Dame, Gavin Nix being a linebacker, Raiden Vines-Bright being a receiver. I don't know if I said that. So important that they're getting guys on campus. I don't think there's anything necessarily coming soon for announcements of commitments from the 2025 class, but getting some of these 2026 receivers and other position guys on campus has been good for Notre Dame. And then there'll be a bit of a lull. There'll still be some more visitors this week that we'll cover on InsideNDSports.com and the Insider Lounge. But then there's won't be a big weekend because of Easter weekend. Notre Dame doesn't do anything practice-wise on Easter weekend, as you can imagine. But the rest of the weekends in April leading up to the Blue-Gold game, so there'll be like three weekends in a row there that Notre Dame will have some good opportunities and some good talent on campus to show them what's going on with recruiting.
And Hannah Hidalgo is not joining the football team, but I'll tell you what, I'd take her at cornerback.
All right, we got a random question from Joe Long. Wasn't there a Tim McDonald at USC a long time ago? He asked you, Eric. He said, sorry, but you're as old as me, possibly.
How old are you, Joe? The Ole Miss coach called me a young man the other day in the press conference. Yeah, there was a Tim McDonald. Let me see when he played at USC.
Well, unfortunately, Chuck McDonald III's dad is Chuck McDonald II, so that's not his dad. I don't know.
13 seasons in the NFL.
Tim. I don't know if there's a relation to Tim McDonald there, but they are. He is from modern day, which is a USC pipeline sometimes.
Two-time All-American, born in Fresno. It is not. Personally, he has two sons, Timothy Jr. and Tevin. It would have to be a grandchild, I guess. So, yeah, Tim McDonald, you good memory. So your memory is better than mine off the top there, Joe. So, but I don't know how old you are, so I can't say whether I'm older than you or not.
He only sent a smiley face. Joe did not yet admit his age. Mark chimed in with a halftime score. Apparently, Iowa's only up 2 points at halftime. According to Mark Yoder, Mark, I appreciate you limiting the earlier play-by-play. There you go. Joe says he's 64. But we appreciate everyone tuning in tonight.
I'm younger.
A lot, but not by a ton. We'll probably be back next week. Our schedule will certainly continue to work around however far women's basketball goes and whatever sort of media obligations Eric will have connected to those, but we should be able to go back out to our normal time next Monday. We'll let you know if that's different. We'll see if we can squeeze an Inside Indy Sports podcast in, depending on how things go. Make sure you're subscribed to us here on the channel, like the video, send some comments if you are watching after we have gone live. And then lastly, make sure you take advantage of our promo. If you're not a subscriber to InsideIndySports.com, that's the promo code NDYT, gets you a 30-day free trial. And when you sign up, that gets you access to everything we do, our premium analysis, recruiting coverage. I'm sure we'll have some transfer portal coverage as it relates to the basketball programs. And then certainly as we get into late April, then the transfer portal becomes a thing with the football program as well. So plenty of things coming up to discuss and talk about and cover. So anything else you want to say before we get out of here, Eric?
Thanks for all the great comments and questions and putting up with my purple shirt and my women's basketball talk when Tyler froze up.
Yeah, I think your purple shirt means you're rooting for LSU, and we'll see how people think about that. But I don't know if Brian Kelly sent you that, but I'm sure it's appreciated down in the bayou. All right, everyone. We appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you next week.